Hello, friends. Welcome to the first of many mini-episodes of Into the Void. I'm your host, Scott Fardella. Today, I'm going to be getting into 13 Reasons Why Season 2. I felt compelled to do a mini-episode about this because of the controversy surrounding the show. It's very polarizing. Some people appreciate the show for the conversations it's starting, and some people think it should be taken off the air for glamorizing suicide. And a lot of people are somewhere in between. I'd love for this to be an active discussion, so please shoot me your thoughts in a DM or comment on the Instagram post once I post it, and let's have a conversation. There will be spoilers ahead, so I'll try not to give too much away, but if you'd rather watch this on your own, unbiased, stop the episode right now and come back when you're finished. Otherwise, without further ado, let's get into it. Season 2 starts a few months after the events of Season 1, and it takes a look at the immediate aftermath of Hannah's suicide and how each character is dealing with it and the civil suit in which Hannah's parents are engaged against the school over the culpability in her death. Which is how they've set up each episode, similar to each character having their own tape in Season 1. Most of the characters have their own day testifying in court, and the show uses this as a method of exposition and to add more depth to the story. At times it felt like this added nuance to the characters, and in other instances, to me, it felt unnecessary or unrealistic and kind of melodramatic. And then ultimately this leads to a criminal case against Bryce Walker for the sexual assault of Jessica, which occurred in Season 1. So my biggest concern with Season 2 going into it, before I had watched any of it, was that I thought the first season said everything that needed to be said, and I'm always afraid of shows overstaying their welcome, particularly when shows which originally only commit to a story arc over a certain number of episodes, and then they find huge success, so they come back for another season, like Stranger Things did. We've seen this in the past with shows like Sons of Anarchy, which in my opinion stayed on the air for about 4 seasons too long, or Dexter, which really jumped the shark with The Trinity Killer, after Dexter found Rita dead in the bathtub. Or, for example, The Walking Dead, which I checked out of probably 3 seasons ago. To me, it seems like there's very few writers and creators now that have the courage to write a story, tell that story, and let that be the end of it. A few amazing examples of this, though, are The Sopranos, which if you haven't seen it by now, for God's sakes, go watch it. It's an absolute masterpiece. David Chase did an incredible job with that series in every way. The acting, the cinematography, the realism, the music, the writing, it's so good. Granted, it's a little dated by now, but if you like mobster movies or crime dramas, you'll love it. And it paved the way for shows like Breaking Bad, which was another show that wrapped things up at the absolute peak of its popularity. A few others worth mentioning would be The Night Of on HBO. It's an 8-part miniseries about an average guy who's been arrested for a murder he may or may not have committed and his journey through the justice system. And then The OA comes to mind too. It's a Netflix original series that has one of the most originally creative storylines that I've seen and in quite a while. And it did exactly what it set out to do. So when I heard that 13 Reasons Why was doing a second season, I thought, much like Stranger Things, please don't. The first season was so good that whatever comes next can't possibly live up to my expectations. So did it? Well, yes and no. I tried to watch this season objectively. I knew I was going to do a mini episode, or I had that early on, I had that inkling. And I had already heard so much of the controversy surrounding the second season and a lot of opinions echoing my own, but I thought, I'll give it a try. Season 2 exceeded my expectations in that, to me, it didn't feel redundant or repetitive. A lot of the criticisms I had read were that the show is just rehashing old themes it had explored already in the first season, which, from a purely entertainment and writing perspective, is true. However, I found it in keeping with the theme of the show that they established in the first season, which was the deep wounds that sexual assault, bullying, and suicide can create. So, yes, the show is still talking about Hannah's suicide, but true to life, only a few months later, no one's really over it yet. I thought the show did an excellent job communicating that to the audience. And so the critics will say that the show is also glorifying suicide, but I have to take issue with that too. So season 2 is almost entirely about every character trying to piece their lives back together after the events of season 1. Alex is recovering from his own suicide attempt. Jessica is struggling with post-traumatic stress disorder after her assault. Clay is dealing with the sudden loss of someone that he loved and all the disillusionment that comes with that, with finding out that someone you idolized maybe isn't perfect after all. And the show explores the lives of Hannah's parents after her death, who are basically in emotional ruin, as you would expect. So here's the thing with glamorizing suicide. Statistically, when a high-profile person kills themselves, it would be romanticized by like-minded fans and can cause a surge in suicidal ideations, Google searches, and sometimes actual suicides. So that's why when K-pop, the K-pop star Kim Jong-hyun killed himself back in December, there were real concerns of a copycat suicide among his young fans. But, and this is an honest question that I would ask everybody and that I ask friends of mine when we have these conversations, is that incumbent upon the show's creators to explicitly state that suicide is wrong in what is, for all intents and purposes, a dramatic fictional recreation of realistic themes? I mean, obviously, they do have some responsibility to show these themes in a responsible way so that they're not muddying the waters or making suicide look attractive. But I think they've done that. I think they've done their due diligence. There's a disclaimer before and after nearly every episode now suggesting that if you need to talk to somebody, here's how you can get some help. They've also taken the time to do an epilogue kind of public service announcement with the actors now and real therapists to address the issues in the show. And they're very active on social media in directing traffic towards self-help at crisis hotlines or elsewhere. Like, I remember seeing in the comments people threatening self-harm, and they're pretty quick, it seems like, to direct them to, you know, the proper channels. Not to mention, the show does an excellent job showing the life-altering heartbreak that occurs after a suicide. So yeah, a show like this will almost certainly create a copycat effect, but I don't think the show is necessarily culpable in that. I think the answer is not to not talk about these themes. I think the answer is to be a fucking parent, you know, or be a better friend, or be a better teacher, a better guidance counselor, a big brother, a big sister. The answer is to talk more about this. What I think we need to do is remove the taboo around the subject so that real, accurate information can be communicated. So if you think someone you know might watch this show or be exposed to it, and you're at all concerned about the message they might receive upon watching it, talk to them, period. Like, you can't nerf the world, and you can't protect everybody, but you can arm them with as much good information as you can hope for, and just, you know, let them continue living their life. And I think that's really all you can do. If someone takes their life because they saw this show, there was likely a lot going on beneath the surface, than was obvious. Because suicide is never quite as simple as a single precipitous event. And there was more often than not warning signs or red flag behaviors long before it happens. And I say almost never quite as simple, because sometimes it is just a single precipitous event, like a breakup or someone losing their job or someone being bullied. Which segues into an interesting theme the show addresses. Who is at fault when a student who is the victim of bullying takes their own life? Should the school be held accountable? In season two, Hannah's parents are engaged in a civil case against Liberty High, alleging that the school failed to provide adequate care for Hannah in the months leading up to her death. It was something that I had never thought about before, but again, this just brought me back to how well the show acts as a deterrent to suicide, as ultimately everyone who testifies and everyone on the tapes felt somewhat responsible for her death, like they let her down. And whether this is true to life or not, it certainly feels like the case when someone takes their own life. Like, I don't think there is any escaping those feelings of responsibility when someone close to you hurts themselves in that way. And one of the most powerful moments in the show for me was when Mr. Porter, the school resource counselor, takes the stand as a witness for the school and then admits his own culpability in letting Hannah walk out the door and not doing more to help her. He breaks down into tears and apologizes to Hannah's mom for not saving her. It was emotional. I got emotional. I won't lie. And speaking of emotional, boy, did I get triggered when Bryce kept getting away. He kept continuously eluding justice through the entire season. And a few times it felt like This was intentional. It was provocative just to keep you watching, but it also felt real. Like, white privilege is real. Wealthy people do get away with more. And I was thinking about this while I was watching. It's hard for us, I think, as Canadians to get a handle on how realistic that depiction of the sports gods young athletes are in the United States, because I think that certainly wasn't the case at my high school. Like, maybe it's a cultural thing, I don't know, but I simply can't imagine those types of events happening the way they did at the high school that I went to. But then again, I suppose my city is a podunk. It's got less than 200,000 people in it, so I don't know, maybe it's a numbers thing. But these massive secondary school institutions in the States that have sponsored football fields and baseball fields and enormous student populations, they probably do deal with these issues on the reg. So I guess maybe in some larger Canadian cities, that happens there too. I don't know. But if you need proof that things like this do happen in real life, there's an amazing documentary on Netflix you can watch called Audrey and Daisy. It focuses on these two girls in different parts of the country. They were sexually assaulted, and it's the aftermath of those assaults. It's really dark and tragic and upsetting, but it's very eye-opening. It's worth a watch. Although it did remind me of the incident with Chase McDonald here at Queens back in August. So during Bryce's criminal sentencing, the judge gives him 3 months probation because he sees no reason why a first-time offender, an otherwise upstanding young man like Bryce, should have his life ruined as well. And as infuriating as this was to hear, it's like chillingly similar to how Justice Letourneau treated Chase McDonald's sexual assault of a 16-year-old. So if you're not familiar with that event, it occurred during a rookie party held for the Gananoque Islanders junior hockey team in the fall of 2015 in the Queen's University District. The victim alleged that McDonald made unwanted physical advances towards her and she became trapped under the weight of his body. She can't be exactly sure what happened in the dark, but she remembers that hands, some belonging to McDonald, were shoved up her shirt and down her pants. Only when a friend entered the room and turned on the lights did the encounter stop. At the urging of a friend, she reported the incident to police, and about a month later, McDonald was charged with 2 counts of sexual assault and 1 count of forcible confinement. The charges were later reduced to common assault, with Justice Letourneau reminding Chase that his sentence was for, quote, an assault, not a sexual assault, because good luck finding any meaningful employment with a sexual conviction on your record. He was given 88 days of intermittent sentencing, or weekends, and 2 years of probation. Oh, and did I mention they initially delayed his sentencing so as not to interfere with his summer internship? Letourneau also said, quote, I played extremely high-end hockey, and I know the mob mentality that can exist in that atmosphere. He went on to say, I'm sure you disappointed not only a lot of people, including your parents, but yourself. Not everyone has the talents you have, and you have them, end quote. As a result of this sentence and the number of inane statements he made like this through the proceedings, more than 17,000 people have signed a petition since then to have him removed from the bench, although I'm not sure this petition's going to have any effect. If it has, I haven't heard of it. When the story broke back in August, though, I shared the story on my Facebook and I got on the soapbox a little bit. I said, this is a quote from my own Facebook. This is awful. I would ask someone to explain how this is, quote, justice, but I know how the system works. Let's protect this otherwise upstanding young man who made one foolish little mistake. Let's knock it down to common assault and give him 3 months of intermittent sentencing, and then the world is yours. Meanwhile, this 16-year-old child gets what? You think she'll be over this in 3 months? How long is she going to carry this around with her? Why should young men like this be shown any leniency? You forfeit your right to a bright future the moment you take it away from somebody else. End quote. And I still stand by that. I think people need to understand the longitude of sexual trauma. Most people with these types of scars carry them forever. And this is particularly the case when they happen during formative years, when you're still developing your identity, your individuality, your sexuality, and then when something as profound as like a sexual trauma happens, or any trauma for that matter, something that you have no way of fully comprehending at that age because you're still figuring yourself out and the rest of the world, let alone this thing that's happened to you, that can take years to unpack and deal with. So if it gets dealt with at all, and then the way you approach relationships are inexorably affected for the rest of your life. The way you approach life in general, the way in which you socialize, either consciously or subconsciously, so many aspects of a person's life can be altered after an event like that. And that's not to say it will be. There's certainly something to be said about personal resiliency and support networks and what resources are available to the person at the time. The amount of money that person has can affect the way they bounce back. But that brings us back to my earlier point about removing the taboo of suicide and the stigma from mental health disorders and that type of thing. Listen, if we treated mental health the same way we treated physical health, we would all be better for it. Like, the average person sees a doctor probably once a year just for a physical checkup, right? Why don't we have a mental checkup as well? And if there are any critics listening thinking, like, I'm blowing this out of proportion or I'm exaggerating, check out the docuseries on Netflix called The Keepers. The setup they give you is about a nun who goes missing and finding out what happened to her. But by episode, I think, 2 or 3, you're hearing from a number of victims of this monster of a school priest named Father Joseph Maskell. So the events of the series take place in the mid to late 60s. So the women and men that you're hearing from are probably in their 60s at the time of the interviews. And you'll watch these people recount their experiences of trauma, grown men and women, and they collapse in tears. Like, it's hard to watch. That leads me into another criticism I've heard from a bunch of different sources. It seems like a lot of people who suffer from mental health disorders feel misrepresented, or like this is a misappropriation because of the way certain things are being portrayed. Maybe they're a little cliche or a little corny. And I have a few things to say about that. First of all, if you're a person suffering from mental health disorders, you of all people must understand that every scenario is unique. So of course there are classifications that are an amalgamation of symptoms that are used to diagnose every illness, but the circumstances and the context of each disorder are always unique. So it's a little silly to claim that they're not doing it right when what it seems like you're really saying is they're not depicting it in the way that I've experienced it. So that being said, I hear you, but please let's also not forget this is TV land, and in TV land, of course they're going to take artistic liberties and make artistic interpretations with what might occur as a result of mental disorders. Like, of course they're going to make things more palatable for a television audience. It's a fine line, I think, that they have to walk between making a show relatable and easy to comprehend and easy to follow, but also being factual and entertaining. So let's not forget they're also trying to make money. They want the show to be a success. The show is set up already for a third season. If you watch the show, you understand. They have to depict things in such a way so that the audience finds themselves invested and compelled to keep watching. And I know I sound like I'm going pretty hard in the paint for this show. I've been talking about it now for 20 minutes. And I don't know, it was good, but it wasn't all good either. There are some things that made me kind of cringe. And we're going to get into them now. I do think some of the realism was sacrificed to make the show more watchable, but this is always the case because it's television. The characters at times seemed a little unrelatable to me, but maybe that's because I'm in my 30s. But when I think back to when I was like 16, 17, 18 and the things that were happening in my world, Jesus Christ, these kids are way more grown up than I ever was at that age. Not one of these teenage kids is actually acting like kids. They act impulsively, sure, but as somebody who's worked in education with kids in this age bracket, I can promise you they're ridiculous. Again, that's not to say this stuff doesn't happen to kids their age. I'm just saying at times it was a little difficult for me to stay immersed in the show when these kids, like high school kids, are navigating incredibly complex, nuanced ethical situations, some of which I know I probably would struggle with now, let alone when I was in high school. But of course, this is TV land, and you have to suspend disbelief a little bit. The last criticism I wanted to touch on was that this season was a little too blunt. I guess some people feel that it's a lot less subtle than the previous season, and that it makes its message painfully and annoyingly clear. And until the final episode, honestly, I felt like the show did an excellent job addressing a number of really complex issues, albeit in a fairly obvious way. But it didn't really bother me until about halfway through the final episode. Spoilers ahead, stop listening right now if you don't want the ending to be ruined. Alright, so the episode starts with a disclaimer of graphic sexual violence and drug use, so you know you're about to see some awful shit. To set it up, the show had been foreshadowing that Tyler is going to do something pretty dark, so you're kind of wringing your hands with him all season, and then he gets caught for acting out in vandalism, so he's sent to a program like anger management. And then a couple weeks later, he returns to school with a buzz cut and a brand new attitude, but I wasn't buying it. And then he's confronted by Monty or Montgomery in the washroom on his first day back. So Montgomery witnessed Bryce raping Hannah in the hot tub back in season one, and he could have stopped it, but he didn't. So when Bryce was called out in season two, all the witnesses began being intimidated by persons unknown. It was Monty. He did it for Bryce. But it turns out Bryce wanted nothing to do with it. So he basically disowns Monty in the last episode and tells him, we're done. And sports, Monty, Bryce, the team, that's all Monty has apparently. So back to the bathroom scene with Tyler, Monty lashes out. He grabs Tyler by the face, smashes his head into the mirror, hard enough to break it. And then he slams his head more than once into the sink. Then they drag him into the bathroom stall and basically waterboard him in the toilet. Then he orders his boys to hold him while he grabs a mop. I know what you're thinking, and you're right. That's exactly what happens. They pull down Tyler's pants and sexually assault him with a mop. It's graphic, and it was honestly hard to watch. It's a lot. My initial reaction to that was that it was over the top, and I think a lot of people share my sentiments, but this is me considering the show in a realistic way. So, of course, these kids are dealing with these situations in a more mature way than I ever would have. It's television. And, of course, something like this would happen because we're supposed to be watching it as something provocative to start a conversation. It's a microcosm of real life, as is most entertainment. So when you think about all these fictional, what all these fictional characters have been through, it's fairly unbelievable. But think of it as like a magnified version of a multitude of real social issues all being played out by these dozen plus individuals. Male-on-male sexual violence happens. Is it unlikely that all of these things would happen to the same group of friends? Well, yeah, obviously. But you're missing the point, I think. It's not as rare or exaggerated as you might think. From another amazing, hard-to-watch documentary, check out Bully. It's a 2011 documentary that spans the United States and explores peer-to-peer bullying in a really heartbreaking way. I was blown away by the level of violence and hatred that a lot of kids endure at the hands of other kids their age. I mean, I was small as a kid and I got picked on, but what you'll see in that documentary is harrowing. Finally, the show ends with Tyler bringing several guns to the spring dance in what was likely to be a mass shooting, if Clay hadn't extended some compassion and talked him off the ledge. The episode ends with police closing in and Clay holding the butt end of an assault rifle. While this is a nice setup for a third season that explores the psychology of school shooters, the cliffhangers in this season had me feeling like I was watching The Killing all over again. If you haven't watched that show yet, skip it. I'll save you some time. You'll watch two or three seasons before an ambiguous reveal of who the killer is in the initial killing. We're talking about 20 to 30 hours before the audience knows who the killer is. It was exhausting. I only made it about 8 episodes. No wonder it was canceled. So did I like season 2? Yes. It's obviously not without its flaws. It was melodramatic, poorly written and acted at times. And there's a scene with Bryce and Justin as kids that was just cringy. Sorry, nameless child actors. Or the scene where Bryce essentially confesses to his mom. Give me a fucking break. If you've seen that scene, it was rough. And yeah, it was a little over the top and a little unbelievable as far as the sheer volume of awful shit that happens to this small group of high school students. Like multiple sexual assaults, physical assaults, attempted murder. What was it, like the first episode where Clay gets run off the road? There's heavy drug use and addiction, suicide, attempted suicide, the threat of a mass shooting, to say nothing of the regular everyday teenager stuff that the majority of us went through. But that's where you have to suspend disbelief and try to watch the show for what it is, because it's important. They're trying. They're trying to tackle tough issues like this in a responsible way. So kudos to the creators. Maybe if more people talked about suicide and bullying and sexual assault, we would all be a little bit more aware of how to deal with it and what resources are available to us. So if you're in the Kingston area and you've been having pervasive thoughts of suicide, you can call the 24-hour crisis line at 613-544-4229 or go to suicideprevention.ca. If you or someone you know have been the victim of sexual assault, you can visit the Sexual Assault Center in Kingston at 400 Elliott Avenue or call 1-877-544-6424 for a 24-hour helpline. It's anonymous. There are resources out there, and you're not alone, I promise you. Whatever you're going through or whatever you might have been through, someone else has been through something similar. So tell someone. Misery shared is halved. It can be hard to share trauma, but help is out there. And I know sometimes it seems insurmountable, but slow progress is progress. Focus on feeling a little bit better each day. And if you're someone concerned about someone you know, conversation goes a long ways. If there's someone in your life that you're at all worried about, have suspicions about, you don't even have to raise the subject. Just drop them a line. Like, just, hey man, you good? Sometimes that's all it takes. Sometimes just seeing someone's name come up on your phone is enough. And personally, I would rather seem like a bit of an over-concerned friend than have to live with the regret of knowing I felt that way and doing nothing about it if something serious were to happen. All right, that's it. That's all. I've listened to the sound of my own voice for far too long now, so I'm going to stop talking. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed this. Whether you did or didn't, please let me know. Shoot me a DM and we can discuss it. I could even do another mini-sode where you join the conversation. I'd love to start talking about this type of thing. Thanks for listening. As always, I appreciate you guys, and we'll see you next time. Bye.